What's up, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the All In Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Eli Cooper, and once again joined by my guy, Mike Badzik. How's it going today, man?
Going good, as I choke to death on water. What a start to the show there. Good to see you, Eli.
Yeah, wonderful audio for you guys to listen to start the show here today. We're so we just want to bring you guys quality content. So thank you for that, Mike. So we got a lot of topics to talk about today, man. We got a killer cop heading to prison and the ramifications of that. We're going to talk a little bit about the best point guard of all time. We're going to talk a little bit about James Harden's injury and the setbacks and the Nets injuries. And then some Vanessa Bryant situation and a big time recruit going to Gonzaga. But first, before we get into that, remember, guys, make sure you guys hit that subscribe button. If you're watching on our YouTube channel or any audio platform that you're listening on, and head over to MyBookieAG and use the promo code ALLINPOD to get 100% of your first deposit matched. So again, offshore gambling site, you can bet on literally anything there. And it's free money. Go ahead and take advantage of that at mybookie.ag. So let's talk about the most important thing. Derek Chauvin's heading to prison. How long? We will still have to hear. He will be sentenced in a week or so. But finally we get one, man. So what were your thoughts when the verdict was announced?
Yeah, so I would say the first thing is, okay, they got it right. You know, this was not a head scratcher. We didn't have to really wonder too much, you know, because of the history. I think we were a little bit nervous, but, you know, we watched this play out on video, right, the entire thing. And I think that's really what struck a chord, you know, all over this country when we think back to this, you know, kind of like transported us back to July and June, whenever the big protests were happening, and how much this really, like, awakened this movement because of that video. And that's what made this such an easy decision for this jury, right? So they only deliberated for like 9 hours, right? So it was easy, right? The evidence was overwhelming. So I would say, you know, it's a relief that they didn't, something didn't happen, because I don't think any of us would have been too surprised if something did happen, right? Based on the system we've seen in place so far. But I will say, you know, there is some justice here. They did get it right, and it looks like he's going to be in jail for the rest of his most of his adult life anyway, probably up to 40 years, I would imagine, with, you know, being convicted here of all three counts. It wasn't just the manslaughter here. You know, we had the second, the third, and the manslaughter. So overall, it's a win. I'm interested in your thoughts, of course.
I was relieved, honestly. Yeah, I was relieved. And like you said, because of the history – there was a ton of doubt, man. I honestly didn't know what they were going to say until they came out and said it. I literally avoided any news coverage after, you know, the defense and prosecution rested. I saw an hour and a half before they were like, oh, they're going to announce the decision between 3:30 to 5. And I was like, all right, I'm not going to watch anything until then. I went out and mowed my lawn. And I was just like, I'm just going to tune it out. I listen to the Office Ladies podcast, all that. I was tuned out. I just forgot all about it because it was just so stressful. And literally as soon as I finished mowing my lawn, I go on Twitter and the verdict is about to be announced. And I'm like, all right, I'll watch whatever you got. And I watch, live on Twitter and I hear, the verdict, and I was just all three times I was just relieved, man, to hear them say guilty, because so many times we have not gotten that verdict. When it was clear and obvious, and although this one I don't think there could have been any other decision made. You know, I think this was one, like you said, there was so much video. It wasn't just like a 30-second clip of the last part. It was like the entire interaction was videoed, for everyone to see. And I think that's kind of where, I mean, the defense had very little to go on here. They were talking about aliens and cookies, but not in their and their closing arguments. And it was just, that's when I was kind of like, all right, we got this in the bag, right? But yeah, at the end of the day, you never really know. So sure, it was just all around relief, you know, that a cop was finally held accountable. It's a big win for the movement, I think, given all the national attention around this one. Hopefully that continues to happen around the country. You know, I understand that that's not always going to happen until major change happens. But, you know, it's just good to get one.
Yeah. And, you know, I also want to say, you know, big ups to the protesters who were in Minneapolis for this and were ready to protest had the verdict came back a different way. And didn't do that when it came back guilty. Because I think that was the big talking point, right? Everyone was looking at them. Everyone, all the eyes immediately turned to those protesters. And if they would have went ahead and did what they would have done had the verdict gone another way, I think the national conversation is a lot different right now about the movement, right? Yep. So the fact that they didn't, right? The fact that there was no rioting. You know, small protests here and there, but all peaceful from all accounts. I think that also is a big step for this movement, is that.
Agreed, because, you know, people love to shift the narrative away from what the actual problem is. So I do love that as well. I was glad to see, you know, people just took the win, essentially. And it was just like, you know, the work's not done. I think people understand that.
Sure.
But we'll take the win.
Absolutely.
So let's get into some basketball talk a little bit.
Yep.
Because my guy's on fire, man. Steph Curry's absolutely ridiculous. He's got the longest 30-point game streak of anyone 33 years or older. He just passed Kobe. Of course, he had to do that. He had to pass Kobe against my Sixers, dropping 49. And almost every game down the stretch here is, I don't want to say must win, but every win they get down the stretch here is huge for them as they try to battle for the eighth seed, or really they're going to be in a play-in game regardless. But, you know, the higher up, the less wins you have to get. They're one game back from the eighth seed as of this recording, one game back from the Grizzlies. I mean, if he carries them to the playoffs, is Curry the MVP?
Well, I know you're probably going to say yes. I have a rule. I have a rule, and we've talked about this before. I don't give it to anybody worse than a four seed. So I'm going to say no. But I will say this has been unbelievable, right? So, you know, these last 10 games, it's really been, you know, and really it's almost been better than vintage Curry, right? This is almost better than the 15-16 Curry, because it's a little bit different, right? Defenses are squarely focused on him. The distraction of, oh, well, he's got Clay next to him, or the distraction of, oh, he's got KD with him, so he doesn't have to do much. Oh, no, all eyes are on him. They're picking him up three-quarter court a lot of the time to get the ball out of his hands, and he's still getting buckets, and he's not doing it in the kind of ways that we've seen other guys get big stats on bad teams, where they're just, you know, crazy usage rates, and they only touch the ball, and it's not moving. You know, we can think of those players. We've discussed them plenty in our hatred for that style. He's not doing that at all. He's playing winning basketball with a team of not winning players, per se. And a lot of those guys have stepped up. But watching that Philadelphia game, and it's him and Embiid are going back and forth, and then he just pulls away in the last couple of minutes. I texted you and conceded. He's the best point guard ever. Even Todd conceded. You know, Todd is a notorious Steph Curry hater.
Really?
He even texted us and conceded that Steph Curry is the best point guard ever. It has been unbelievable. And he's a little bit different, right? He's a little bit bulkier, actually. When you watch Steph play nowadays, it's not just the little skinny Steph shake and bake. It's, you know, he'll get into you a little bit. It's a little bit different. And it's been super impressive. I know you've been loving it.
I've been loving it, man, because for a multitude of reasons. But I think this is the best year of his career individually. Individually, this is the best season he's ever had. And I think it's a lot of it is because of that added strength that you mentioned. Where, you know, and I think he prepared for this season in that way. Like, man, I'm going to have to do more than I've ever had to do in my career, probably since since before this 5-year run. Yep. And he's been great, man. I said before the season, remember Curry was my MVP pick. And yes. I said, if he averages 30, I think he can get this Golden State team above a 6 seed. And I think, that makes him MVP. He's not going to get them above a 6 seed, but if he gets them into the playoffs, he's the MVP in my opinion. Here's why. Without Stephen Curry in 8 games, mm-hmm. Golden State is 1-7. And if you just look at the construction of this roster, they have the second most balls in the lottery without Stephen Curry if you take him off this team.
Mm. Good chance.
No doubt in my mind. If you take Nikola Jokic off of the Nuggets, they might still be with a healthy Jamal Murray.
Yeah.
They might still be in the playoffs.
But Jamal Murray's been hurt, so I still have Jokic here as the MVP, and I think Jokic is going to get it. I just think the injuries hurt everyone else too much, right? Embiid's going to miss probably 20 games.
Right.
And I probably would have still Embiid second over Steph. But Jokic, you know, and I would have said, now this would be maybe a different discussion too, if the Nuggets took a step back when Jamal Murray got hurt, like we thought they might. If Jamal Murray gets hurt and they start dropping, right? Yeah. And now they're in that 7-8 seed discussion with the Warriors. Maybe Steph is the guy then. But because Jokic has been able to sustain them, I'm still rocking with Jokic.
That's valid. But here's my issue with Jokic. The Nuggets are worse this year than they were last year.
Yeah.
And that was with Jamal Murray being healthy. Right. So, and that's with Jamal Murray being healthy for most of the year. Jamal Murray just went down. So my thing is, where's the value in that? You know what I mean? Like, he's kind of like the last guy standing at this point, and that's why he's at the top of he's the front runner. Because if you think about it, all season he was not really in the top three until injuries started happening, and then we were kind of like, okay, Jokic by default. To me, if we're talking about the most valuable player to their team, it's the answer to that is Steph Curry, and then it's Joel Embiid. The Sixers are 9-9 without Embiid, but that's still 500. That's still a playoff team in the East. So if take all these three guys, I think these are the finalists, right? Like, I don't think with 20 games left, I don't see anyone else entering this conversation. Of all three of these guys, Steph Curry has the absolute highest value to his team.
Yeah.
To me, Joel Embiid has the second highest value because they're significantly better with him. Their win percentage is 25% higher with Embiid in the lineup than it is without him in the lineup. Yeah. And then to me, it's Jokic. Now, of course, like you said, Joel Embiid is going to miss 20 plus games. So, you know, how does that factor in, right? You know, so I'm not saying I'm going to throw a fit if Curry doesn't win MVP. Because I will fully understand. And I wouldn't even be mad if Embiid doesn't win it. If Jokic wins it, he's absolutely deserving. But I think Stephen Curry has the best case if he makes the playoffs. He's got to make the playoffs because otherwise, being in the lottery, where you're picking in the lottery doesn't matter. If you're in the playoffs, that's a different story. I think he deserves it if he drags this god-awful team to the playoffs.
Well, you know, I think there's something to be said for that. And I think another question would be, and maybe this isn't the way we're supposed to look at it, right, based on how the award is set up. But if you ask me which guy I'd rather have leading my team going into the playoffs, Steph or Jokic, it's Steph, 100%.
Yeah,
100%. It's easily Steph. But you know, the funny thing is, you know who deserves MVP? Giannis. Giannis deserves the MVP. No one's going to give it to him, okay? No one's going to give it to him because of the playoff stuff. He's the MVP. He's having the same season he's had the last 2 years when he's got the MVP. Yeah. They have a little bit worse of a record. But he's having the same year. He's the same player. If he was the MVP then, right? But because we're going to look at the playoff stuff and we're going to say we're sick of this, he's got no chance. But really, and also, like, I wouldn't be totally shocked if Jokic did fall, if Denver did fall in the standings a little bit. If voters said, maybe it's Giannis just because of, you know, we can't give it to anyone else because of records. Maybe.
Right.
Or maybe they give it to Steph.
Well, see, here's the thing. With something like MVP being around for so long, there's been an obvious precedent set. Mm-hmm. Well, not an obvious precedent, actually, I shouldn't say. Typically, it's been best player on best team, yes, or incredible numbers, or both, as it's been Giannis. Those two things have been Giannis for the last 2 years. So, you know what I mean? Like, he does have probably the best numbers. I don't know if you want to argue that Jokic has better numbers because he averages more assists. You could, but Giannis's defensive numbers are going to be better. So, like, and their seeding's higher. So,
yeah,
like, you can certainly make an argument there, but it's just because the MVP award travels so much, right? It's not an award that sticks to almost to really anybody. There's the voter fatigue that factors in. The like you said, the lack of success in the playoffs for him. That's the problem with the MVP award, is that the narrative around it changes too much.
Yeah.
To the point where I'm wondering if it should just be a most outstanding player more than a most valuable, right? Because like the most outstanding might be easier to pick, and from year to year you can make like different cases for a different player. You know what I mean? But like most valuable, it means something. Whereas most outstanding, you can kind of just pick whoever wowed you the most, which might be Nikola Jokic or Joel Embiid, whatever, or Stephen Curry, whatever. So that's the issue that I have with the MVP award. But
yeah,
my preseason prediction isn't looking too bad. I think I had the best one out of all of us that were on that show, including Todd. So and Todd looked at me like I was crazy.
Todd had the worst.
So suck it, Todd.
Todd had the worst easily because
yes, he did.
He had Anthony Davis, who's been hurt. You know,
yeah.
I had Kawhi. I don't hate that pick. Like, he's been really good, and they're gonna finish. As far as all these guys who are in the MVP, they're gonna finish just as high as anyone else. You know, with the exception of Embiid.
Right.
Yeah, you know, he's been good.
Yeah, he has been good. Honestly, the Clippers have a better record than the Nuggets. So
yeah, right.
If it wasn't for stats, Kawhi would be in there over Jokic, if you ask me. But you know, narratives.
It's all about narratives.
So let's shift on over to the Eastern Conference a little bit here. James Harden suffers a setback with his hamstring. KD's still day-to-day or week-to-week. I'm not sure what they're not really called. They said day-to-day, but they said they were going to check back in with him next week. So we don't really know his status either. Kyrie Irving plays about 5 games and then takes 3 personal days.
Yeah.
This group has only played 7 games together as a trio, and there's only about 20 games left. You're probably not going to get Harden back before the end of the regular season. I'm assuming that he's done till the playoffs with a hamstring injury. That's not something you want to rush. So does this concern you at all heading into the playoffs?
Definitely. It concerns me a lot. I think you're right. Harden is not going to be back until the playoffs, it looks like. And, you know, it's like at some point these guys have to play together. We saw this last year with the Clippers, actually. The Clippers had only played together with their starting 5, like 15 to 20 games, I think it was. They just had no chemistry, and it showed up in the playoffs against a team like Denver who had a lot of chemistry. So I think that this stuff does matter, right? So now you would also argue that no team has had the firepower that these guys have had, right? So even if you're looking at Clippers last year and how good they were, Kawhi and Paul George, these guys have KD, Kyrie, and Harden, which is kind of like, I don't think we always realize how stupid that, how crazy that is to have those three guys and how good they could be. So it definitely concerns me. I'm a big chemistry guy. Now, the way they play probably requires a little bit less chemistry, right? It's a lot of one-on-one, a lot of the things that we don't love. But
offensively,
of course. And defensively, this matters too. Defensively, this definitely matters, especially when you look at a team that we already would assume had defensive issues, and you add in not having any of this chemistry.
Yeah, and that's, you know, my biggest concern is actually defensively for them. Because if we're being honest, if those three guys are healthy with their, you know, Steve Nash and Mike D'Antoni constructed offense, I don't think it really matters offensively what the kind of chemistry that they have. They can get by offensively with just off of their pure scoring ability. They have three guys who could give you 50 on any given night. So, you know, it's not, that's not the concern. The concern for me is defensively. One, they're not great defenders. And two, they are not going to have a defensive team chemistry. And that stuff matters because when you're rotating, like, defense in the NBA is never about being able to guard your guy. Because if we're being honest, as you get later into the playoffs, nobody can guard the other team's best player and just stop him one-on-one. Right. If your best player is like that. So it's more of a team effort to where you have to rely on help, second rotations, things like that. And if you don't have that confidence that, hey, when I help, this guy's going to cover my guy, it makes you hesitant to help. And that leaves a lot of defensive breakdowns. Or if I don't know that he's going to help, I might not be in position for second help, stuff like that. Sure. That leads to a lot of defensive breakdowns. You know, especially for a team that doesn't have natural good defenders. So I'm really concerned about them. And here's the other thing. You know, we talked about this on the last episode, how dangerous the Heat could be in the playoffs. They're at the 7 seed right now.
Yep.
If they, with the Celtics playing this well, I think Miami might, could possibly be locked into the 7 seed. If they get Miami in the first round, a team that's been together, obviously, for a finals run, and they, if they can get anything out of Tyler Harrell, they can beat the Nets in the first round. Because James Harden's going to be incredibly rusty. He's going to be, you know, 25 games out of shape, you know, or maybe even more. And on top of that, he already has a conditioning and weight issue. Right. Yeah. Like that's been a big knock on James Harden, especially in the postseason. So he's going to be coming back out of shape and out of rhythm, and then having to get back into chemistry with KD and Kyrie will probably develop some chemistry here towards the end of the season because they haven't played together that much either. But they will have a little bit of chemistry going into the playoffs and then have to adjust their games to then include James Harden. So that chemistry that they just developed together is then going to take a hit. So, and against a team that is as gritty defensively as the Heat, who already are known for disrupting how teams play with their defense, I don't love that matchup for the Nets in the first round. We could be looking at a first round upset for these three guys, and just imagine the slander that would lead to.
Kevin Durant would be active on Twitter. but I think you're right. And I look at this entire Eastern Conference. I don't trust anybody to definitely win their first round series, other than probably the Sixers, depending on who that 8 seed is. Because listen, and Miami is not out of being that 8 seed either. Because I just learned this: the play-in game this year, it's not just 7 versus 10. 8 versus 9, right? So it's actually 7 versus 8. The loser plays the winner of 8 versus 10, and then the winner of that game is the 8 seed, right?
You mean 9 versus 10?
Sure, 9 versus 10. Yeah. And the winner of 9 versus 10 plays the loser of 7 versus 8. You could be in a scenario here where even if Miami's the 7th seed at the end of the season, they could be playing Philly in the first round. Whoever it is, you don't want to be playing Miami in the first round. I don't think anybody would pick them first. You pick them last for sure, including the Nets, who 31 different starting lineups this year. That typically is not great.
Yeah. Yeah, and to me, I think people should temper expectations for the Nets. I really do. When's the last time you saw one of these super teams formed, even prior to the season, really win a championship in their first year? I guess the Lakers, but they were only a 2 superstar team. I'm talking about teams with like 3 superstars. Wow. Even the Heatles lost in their first year. They lost in the finals. I guess Boston. Boston would be the one. But again, they had an entire offseason to prepare and get ready, and then an entire regular season where they did not load manage or have any injuries. They had all that time to develop their chemistry. We have never seen a team put together this way mid-season with a lack of chemistry like this. And even amongst KD and Kyrie, they have not played a ton of games together. And then all three only playing 7 games heading into the playoffs. That is not a recipe for championship success.
Not good.
I mean, honestly, in order for them to win, all three of those guys would, to me, would just have to go nuts in the playoffs offensively for them to win a title this year. And to me, that, I mean, it's certainly a possibility.
I was going to say, that's not something out of the question.
It's not at all. It's not at all. But to me, that's like, that's asking a lot of three guys with one basketball.
I agree.
All right. So let's talk about some other news in the NBA, or really outside of the NBA a little bit.
Yeah.
Vanessa Bryant, the executor of Kobe Bryant's estate, declined to renew the contract for Kobe and Nike, ending probably one of the best sneaker deals that Nike has. You can argue LeBron, but from a shoe standpoint, I think Kobe's are the most popular like sneaker amongst hoopers, especially in the NBA. It's the most worn sneaker amongst players in the NBA. And it's well documented Kobe's history with Nike. What were your thoughts when you heard the news about this one?
Yeah, it was a little bit surprising. I don't know. You know, not many players have a deal with a shoe company post 5 years after retirement, right? So when he retired in 2016, he signed a 5-year post retirement deal with the shoe. Most athletes don't make it past that 5-year. You thought Kobe would because of who he is, and not only that, also the recent, you know, tragic death, of course, that tends to help with things like that. So maybe it's even Vanessa Bryant looking at it and saying, you know, maybe this is a good opportunity to move on. This is, you know, maybe just a natural split for us. So I think it makes sense. It's a little confusing that it's happening now, especially because, you know, Jordan is inducting him into the Hall of Fame.
Right.
Last I checked, Jordan is still owned by Nike, right? So you would think that something would have been smoothed out there. Maybe that doesn't even matter. Maybe it's just a deep connection between Michael and Kobe, which is probably what's happening, right? And that's why he's going to induct him into the Hall of Fame. But it was surprising.
Yeah. Well, apparently, Vanessa Bryant has an issue with the limited access to Kobe shoes. And I think that's why there wasn't a renewal here. I think if Kobe's were easier to get, there's not a problem. The issue is with Nike limiting the releases on his sneakers, they're incredibly tough to get. I don't know. Yeah. When's the last time you tried to shop for some Kobe's?
Can't do it. I don't even try.
After his death, you didn't even think about it, honestly. If you didn't already have Kobe's, you were stuck. Yeah. And then the Nike sneakers app, for not just Kobe's, but for anyone in general, has been a failure. Like you need the greatest luck of all time to get sneakers through there. And that's like the biggest thing that they're pushing for, like new releases. So that's been a huge failure for them, in my opinion, as far as the limited access that people have to these shoes. And Vanessa Bryant said in her statement afterwards that it was very important to her that Kobe fans worldwide had access to getting his shoes. Mm-hmm. And they actually just bought up they're working on getting all the trademarks for, you know, the Mamba, the logo. I think they already own the Mamba name and the logo, but they were buying up pretty much anything else that would have to do with his sneaker empire. And Kobe had discussed doing his own brand before his death. And I think that's what Vanessa's thinking is, like, you know, Nike wasn't quite, you know, getting out the access that we wanted for Kobe fans. Right. And maybe we can do this on our own and start our own Mamba brand or whatever. And I got to say, if that's the case, I'm not mad. I'm not mad at her. That's for someone who has, I have a ton of Kobe's sitting in this closet back here. That was the shoe I wore in high school. I wore Kobe's for 3 of my 4 years in college. And I still wear them now anytime I play. It's just, they're the most comfortable sneaker to play in.
I love Kobe.
So I've loved the Nike and Kobe partnership as much as anybody, but the limited access to his shoes was a serious issue. And I don't think Vanessa felt that Nike was taking it as seriously as she had wanted. And I think that's why we're seeing this here. So it's a sad day. It really is. and Nike Kobe's are going to go through the roof on resale for resellers and stuff like that. So that makes it even worse because now it's going to be even harder for you to get a pair of Kobe's without paying a fortune with this contract not being renewed.
Yeah, but I think you're right. Like, they were really good shoes. Yeah. So, you know, you wonder what's next.
Agreed. All right. So let's close out today's show and talk a little bit about the number one player in the country, Chet Holmgren. For those of you who may not know who he is, he's a 7'1" kid from Minnesota. He went to Minnehaha. You may have seen a video of him about a year or two ago going behind the back on Curry at his Under Armour camp. Yeah. Real long, lanky kid who can score from anywhere. He kind of has a guard skill set, even though he's like 7'1", 190. Mm-hmm. And he was a heavy favorite to go to the Zags. His former high school teammate, Jalen Suggs, was just at Gonzaga and obviously had a great season there, which probably hand-delivered Chet to Gonzaga. Right. Gonzaga's reloading, man. Not only is he coming, they had already had a commitment from Hunter Salas, the number 14 player in the country, to replace Jalen Suggs. Who knows if they get Nembhard back or Drew Timmy. We're not sure what their statuses are yet. But they do have another good recruiting class. They have the number 2 recruiting class coming back in. Yep. Let's talk about Chet first. What do you think he's going to look like at the next level?
Well, so we talked about it before we went on air. He's skinny. He is a high school kid, no doubt about it. So weight room has to be priority number one, I think. But you know, we also could see him go another route where Kevin Durant is not a dissimilar build of a guy like this coming out of high school into his first couple of years. We remember the bench presses with Kevin Durant, and that was an issue. But I'm excited for this Gonzaga program. Like, they have really ascended right now, right? So they went from being this team who was a great mid-major to being a pretty much a powerhouse every year to now becoming one of these top program one-and-done getting schools. Yeah. Which is really just an ascension into a level that few schools ever get to, right? Duke, Kentucky, Carolina. Now we see Gonzaga entering that realm. Michigan is entering that realm, especially with this recruiting class they have coming in for next year. Yeah. It's interesting to see how this evolves and as one and done is expanded to other schools, not just the Blue Bloods, what other programs look like with it and how it spreads throughout college basketball. So I think he's going to be good. I mean, you probably know more than me about him.
Yeah, I think he'll be fine, especially at the next level. He's just too skilled and too long and too lanky for him not to be a great college basketball player. The biggest concern will actually end up being the pro level, which is why I think we're seeing him choose this route over something like the G League. That wasn't really something in consideration. And really, amongst this class in general, this class did not seem to want to do the G League route, which the previous class, the 2020 class, had quite a few players who took that route. And from what I've been reading, it's actually helped their draft stocks. But this class seems to want to play college basketball. And for this kid, I don't think he could have picked a better fit than Gonzaga, to be honest. He's got a Gonzaga style of play written all over him. So I think it's a hand in glove fit for him. Mark Few, like you said, has built one of the best programs in the country. Yeah. He's at this point, he's done everything that you could possibly do for a college basketball program, except win a national championship. And 1 year after getting the highest recruit he ever had in Jalen Suggs, he now gets Chet Holmgren, who's the new highest recruit he's ever had.
Yep.
He's replacing Suggs with another high caliber freshman. And if he can get one or two guys to come back, if he can get Nembhard and Timmy to come back, even without one of those guys, they're the favorites.
I think they're both to win it
next year. And I would too. I don't think either of those guys are really high projected pros.
Yeah.
So I would say that both of them could use another year at Gonzaga. And if they come back, I think they have another legitimate chance at, being the top team in the country and giving themselves another chance at a title. But ultimately for Gonzaga, the thing holding them back to me is the WCC.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. It's not as bad of a conference as it may seem, but to them it is, because if you want to win national championships, you've got to be at least tested throughout the season. You know, even you can schedule all the non-conference, like tough non-conference games that you want, but those are typically early in the year. You're not being pushed in your conference play and not seeing a ton of different styles of play. Like they clearly didn't see anyone like Baylor before they got to Baylor.
Right.
And that was clear and obvious. And even UCLA was able to get up under them and kind of bother them a little bit. And to me, that's just none of the teams in the WCC that are good play that style. BYU is traditionally the second best team in that, or St. Mary's. Those are the top three teams in that conference typically every year. And all those teams play the same. They're spacing, high pick and rolls, finesse teams. None of those teams really get down and dirty. So that's where, that's the thing that's holding Gonzaga back, is can they adjust when they have to go, outside of their conference and play against, dogs, to be honest. And that's always going to be the biggest question mark. And especially for a guy for Chet, like he's going to have a great year next year. And then he's going to see a kid who's bigger, stronger, and just as laterally quick. Mm-hmm. And that's where it's like, how are you going to handle that? And that's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, it is going to be interesting to see. And I agree with you 100%. If I were them, I'd be looking for tougher competition. They were supposed to get it this year, but games got canceled because of COVID, and it showed up in the tournament. You know, I always like, come tournament time, I like the teams who have been together for a couple of years. I like your team, not one of your teams, this next coming year, and that's Villanova as a team who has four of their top five scorers coming back. They could be challenging for a national championship. I think that they will be. And UCLA is probably the other one. I think those are probably the top three coming into next year for me anyway. We're always going to have this conversation about Gonzaga until they get over that hump. And we do. This is how it works, right? You can't get over the hump. We're going to label you a loser and talk about it until you do. But getting a guy like this probably helps their case.
Agreed. And honestly, I think eventually you've got to get one to keep these kind of recruits coming in.
Yep.
Because if kids are going to go to college, they're going to want to play in these games. And if they don't think that you can win it because they don't like the conference, or they don't think your conference prepares you, these kind of recruits won't keep coming for them. So we'll see. I'm excited to see him at the next level, man. I think a lot of people probably haven't heard of this kid. He hasn't had as much hype as typical number one recruits have had, which is surprising because he's a unicorn, So it's going to be interesting to see how he shows out for Gonzaga next year.
Yeah. And lastly on this, Eli, this also coming this next NBA season, talking about next year, we're also going to get a better look at what this G League versus college decision and maybe looking at that based on Jalen Green coming in out of the G League. He's looking like he's going to be the number one or number two pick. So it looks like we're going to get a pretty good feel for how the G League prepares you, right? So I think the big worry coming in it would be the defense, especially. That's kind of what people said going into this year is G League versus college. The college atmosphere prepares you defensively, probably a little bit better, more structured, depending on what program you go to.
Right.
I think Gonzaga is a good program for that. So we're going to get to see that, right? And then that's probably going to influence these recruits in the following years is how these G League guys turn out.
Yeah, that and the other thing that's going to get factored in here is hopefully it's looking like legislation is going to pass that's going to allow players to make money off of their likeness. So the college sports games coming back and stuff like that, like that's intriguing, man. Like if I'm a high school recruit and I can be on the NCAA, they haven't said an NCAA basketball game is coming out, but they did say football was coming. But you've got to assume.
Too long, man.
The football one's confirmed. Is confirmed. Yeah. The basketball one, I would assume it would be next. But if that's a thing, that's going to be you know, I want to be on a video game, man. I want to use Heck myself yeah. in North the Carolina. You know what I mean? Like, game, yeah. yeah, exactly. So that's going to be something that kids that attracts kids as well. So there's going to be this nice battle between the G League and college. And really, I think what it ultimately will become is the G League will force the NCAA to take more steps pro player, you know, as yeah. far as allowing them to make certain money off of endorsements and their likeness. Yeah. And then for kids who still don't want to go that route, they will have the G League instead of having to go to Australia or Brandon Jennings went all the way to Europe. Yeah. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. That will no longer happen. I think kids will be like, all right, well, if I don't want to play in college, I can still play professional level basketball here in the G League. And to your point, I think the G League is a better evaluation of mm-hmm. what a player is going to be, especially from the offensive end, sure. because you're shooting NBA three-pointers, yep. you're running NBA style offenses, you know, more pick. There's obviously going to be more pick and rolls, things like that you have to play through. So people are going to see how you handle that. Yep. The G League is typically, you know, going to be older players. So you're playing against guys who are bigger and stronger than you already. And there's a lot of athletes in the G League as well, like athletic players who aren't quite as skilled enough to play in the NBA. But there's a lot of hungry guys there who have something to play for. So I think that's a really good measure. And a lot of those guys looked good, especially Jalen Green. He looked really good in the G League. And to me, if I'm a GM, I'm more confident knowing what I would be getting from Jalen Green day one than Cade Cunningham. Mm. And I love Cade Cunningham. I think he has more upside than Jalen Green because he's a 6'8 floor general.
Yeah.
So if I'm taking someone number one, it's probably Cade. But I think I got a bet. If I'm a GM or a scout, I think I got a better look at Jalen Green because he played NBA style basketball for a year. Yeah. Versus Cade Cunningham playing against packed line defenses and right, teams with right, no 3 seconds, a shorter 3-point line, like things like that. You know, upside wise, you're probably still taking Cade, but knowing what I have, I'm saying Jalen Green.
Yeah, but the Cade upside is just
too high.
It's crazy high.
Yeah.
When you think of him as an offensive player, and I think if you're Houston, you end up with that one pick. Who knows? Who's going to end up with that first-round pick? Maybe it's the T-Wolves. Wouldn't that be something?
Could be the Thunder.
Could be the Thunder. Oh, my gosh. Can you imagine SGA and Cade Cunningham together?
That's a scary duo right there.
That's a scary
duo. Two young killers, big guards. I love big guards. So two guys who don't necessarily, even though Cade, you know, kind of dominated the ball at Oklahoma State, he doesn't actually need the ball as much as people might think. To where he can play alongside of a SGA. That would actually be a lovely, lovely duo right there. Yeah, and then Moses Brown at the center spot. I like his upside, especially defensively. So they'd have some nice building blocks there. And I don't even know the kid. I don't know how to pronounce the kid's name. I'm not even going to try the long power forward that they have.
The seven-foot kid.
Yeah.
Pokey.
Yeah, is that what they call him? Okay, we'll call him Pokey. Yeah, that kid's got some game, man. So they've secretly, if there was anyone to copy a model of tanking,
sure.
Look at what OKC's doing.
Like and they just look at what OKC's doing. Yeah,
they just loaded up on picks, yep. And then they're like, all right, well, let's just throw all of our young players out here and see what they have. And they're finding a couple of guys that can play, and they're like, all right. And then really, even if they didn't win the lottery, they could package a lot of these picks together and move up to get certain players. So because they have zillions of picks over these next like 4 or 5 years, that's the way you do it. You load up on picks, not just tank and hope that you get the number one pick. You got to load up on picks so you can package them together for trades. OKC's doing a good job given the situation that they had.
Yeah, and you think about, like, the Magic who made this Vucevic trade, and I think that rightly at the time said they probably gave up too much. Vucevic has not worked out, and now you're sitting there with the Magic who have not only their own first-round pick, but Chicago's first-round pick. They could be picking twice in the top 6 or 7. In a good draft class. They could potentially get both of those G League guys and Jalen Green and Jonathan Kuminga. Like, they could put some guys together here.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, so it's interesting to see how that plays out just for next year in college basketball and also in this draft. I think there's going to be a lot of long-term impact on the NBA from some of these young guys coming up.
Yeah.
But that's all we have for today's show. Mike, any last thoughts for our viewers today?
Yeah, last thoughts. AllInNetwork.net, place to be. You can see mock drafts. So NFL draft is coming up here a week from Thursday, which we're recording on Thursday. A week from today is the NFL draft. Eli's got his mock drafts up, so make sure you're checking those out, AllInNetwork.net. Hit the subscribe button. If you're watching on YouTube, hit the notification button, and you'll know when we go live or drop new content. And if you're listening on audio, give us a thumbs up, a rating, even a review would go a long way. So we appreciate you guys listening. So help us out. Help us out with the subscribe button, yo.
Yes, absolutely. And make sure you guys download the app. Our app just got an update on the Google Play Store. And it's a really cool, easy layout for those of you that have Androids. Probably the first time that for those of you that have an Android, you will have something better than what an Apple user would due to some restrictions on the Apple Store. Our app on the Google Play Store looks better than it does on Apple. So for those of you with Androids, check out the app. It's great. Even if you have an iPhone, make sure you download our app. You can still listen to our podcast, see our social media feed, things like that. Like Mike said, my first two mock drafts are up on the website. My brother, Kyle, is working on his first mock draft, which will be coming out soon. He's the author of the All In Bets and DFS blog. So he's going to be coming out with a mock draft. And then we have something special coming up right before the draft, a little different type of mock draft that's going to be coming out. So we're just doing a ton of mock drafts. Stay tuned. Stay tuned up until Thursday before the NFL draft. Make sure you guys are hitting all those subscribe buttons and downloading the apps. But thank you guys again. Episode 66 of the All In Podcast has been a great one. And we will see you guys again next week.
Peace.